from the little book of Ruth again, in chapter 3. Ruth, we read the whole of chapter 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, "My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? And now it is not those of our kindred with whose maidens I was. Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor.
Wash thyself therefore as the ninety, and put thy raiment upon thee,
and get thee down to the floor. But then make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down. And he will tell thee what thou shalt do." And she said unto her, "All that thou sayest unto me I will do." And she went out unto the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. And she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet, and he said, "Who art thou?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a dear kinsman." And he said, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not young men, but the poor and rich. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And now it is true that I am thy dear kinsman, howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I. Carry this night that it shall be in the morning, that if he will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee, if the Lord said, lie down unto the morning." And she laid his feet until the morning, and she rose up before one to know another. And he said, "Let it not be known that a woman came unto the floor, into the floor." Also he said, "Bring the veil that thou hast upon thee and fold it." And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her, and she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "Who art thou, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done to her. And she said, "These 6 measures of barley give he me, for he said unto me, go not empty unto thy mother-in-law." Then said she, "Sit still, my daughter, until I know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be at rest until he has finished the thing that's dead." That's our reading. The Lord's blessing is heaven. Now, I think it is probably true to say that even in the parts of the Bible that we are most familiar with, there are some parts that we find a little unusual. If you take in the New Testament, for example, the Gospel according to John, how many chapters of that book we know just off the tip of our tongue, so to speak. But then there may be 1 or 2 chapters in John with which we are not so familiar. Take the prophecy of Isaiah. And 1 or 2 chapters in that great prophecy are very familiar and precious to the Lord's people. But then there are other chapters that are more or less untrodden territory. We have said a number of times that the book of Ruth is the most familiar of the Bible's short book. And I think I'm on fairly safe ground. I'm not exaggerating if I say that out of its 4 chapters, perhaps the one we have read tonight is the least familiar. Chapter 1 and chapter 2 are very, very well known, and they cover territory that is often covered in gospel meetings and ministry meetings. But as well as being the shortest chapter of this book, chapter 3, I think, in many respects, is its strangest. We are being invited here to take a look at customs that are totally alien to our Western culture. If a lady did what we are told Ruth did here, it would be considered quite bold and forward and inappropriate by the standards that we have But I think we have to read the passage through Oriental glasses and to see that this custom, in the setting of its own culture, was quite appropriate and was quite acceptable. Indeed, it was the way to move forward, and I might make some reference to that shortly.
Now, I don't want to repeat what we have covered. We haven't really time for that tonight. Although it's a short chapter, it's a good chapter. When the proceedings of these verses were over,
we are told that Ruth went back to her home with 6 measures, probably as much as she could carry. I guess if we would get just as much as that as a meeting, but even if we get 1 or 2 measures, and each one goes away from the meeting with a little portion from the gravity of the heavenly rule, well, it will be a worthwhile occasion of being gathered. Now, there will be I divide the meeting into 2 parts. A shorter part and then another part that we give more attention to. And there will be 2 subjects before our minds tonight. First of all, I want to continue what we have already commenced. The subject of commitment for a little while, I speak about that. And then, in the second part of the meeting, I want to mention some lessons about communion that are very, very important and illustrated in this wonderful chapter. Now, for those who haven't been able to be here, I want to mention the importance of this first subject in the book. Those of you who have already heard this ground cover 2 days, if you can bear with me for a minute or two, it will just allow us all to come together. We have made great mention, or put great emphasis upon, the repeated mention in this book of the word kindness. And I've spent quite a bit of time with the previous 2 days, and I don't want to use any time tonight in that way, to explain that scholars of the original language, after in-depth investigation of this word, they have come to the conclusion that it is practically impossible to find any one single English word that will convey every nuance of meaning that is contained in the Hebrew word. Now, we have mentioned that in chapter 1, when Naomi has prayed, she hopes that the Lord will be kindless with the 2 girls, as the 2 girls dealt kindness with her husband. In chapter 2, when Ruth comes back to Naomi with the grain from the barley field, Naomi bursts into a benediction and she says, "Blessed be he of the Lord who has not left off his kindness to the dead and the living." And I think that that same thought is even more emphasized tonight in our chapter 3, because when Boaz notices Ruth at his feet and begins to speak to her, he says, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter," in verse 10, "for thou hast shown more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning." So that when he speaks to her on this occasion, he classifies these 2 degrees of kindness. Now he said, "You've already shown kindness." But he said, "The kindness that you're just showing to me now is even greater than the kindness that you previously showed." Well, you say, what? If the English word kindness does not fully communicate the flavor of the original word, what word best does that job? Well, as I say, there's no one. You see, sometimes this word has the idea of love and compassion and generosity and all that whole group of words. But then I kept emphasizing, and I know some of you are becoming a little bit weary, that there are many passages of the Old Testament where this word would be better translated by some such term as loyalty. Now, it's looking between us. It's not just a faction. And it is the thought of allegiance. Not just compassion, but there's also the thought of commitment. Let me give you an example or 2. You remember the Absalom and Hoshea. When Absalom had usurped the throne and David had been chased out of Jerusalem, and Hoshea came back to Jerusalem and he pretended to be one of Absalom's followers. Now Absalom had a suspicion that this man Hoshea was still a faithful follower of David. And he said to him, he said, come to him. He said, you're coming to me. He said, is this the kindness that you show to your friend? Now we put in the word loyalty. Is this? He said, you're pretending to come to me. He said, is this the loyalty that you're showing to your friend here? You remember in Jeremiah chapter 2, the Lord speaks about Israel, and he says, I remember thee the kindness of thy youth, the love of thy espousal. You put in the word loyalty there. God says, I remember thee the loyalty of thy youth and the love of thy espousal. And I think one of the many passages where the idea of loyalty fits a little bit better than kindness. Put it in here. And I know this is not really the way to do a word study, so don't take your pattern from this, but I'm having to abbreviate. Boaz says to Ruth, he says, blessed be thou of the Lord, my brother, for he said, the loyalty which you show to me now is even greater than the loyalty that you have previously shown. Now what was the previous loyalty? Well, the previous loyalty was very, very simply, from the previous reading of this book, the previous loyalty was this Moabite's girl's unflinching commitment to her widowed mother-in-law. In the strongest of terms, we read earlier in the book that she claimed to her mother-in-law, and despite persuasion in the opposite direction, she couldn't be turned back, and she was, and even when they got into the land and the mother-in-law was in poverty, this girl was so committed to her mother-in-law that she actually went out and she worked like a slave in the field to get something to keep her mother-in-law. She was absolutely committed in loyalty to her mother-in-law. And of course now Owen says, the loyalty that you're showing now by what you're doing in chapter 3 is even a greater loyalty, and I'll explain what that is just in a couple of minutes. Now there are three individuals, three figures in this chapter. Naomi, Boaz, and Ruth. And I want to think about the commitment that we see associated with each one of these figures just quickly, and then I move to the other branch of the subject that I have in mind. First of all, Naomi. And you see, there's a beautiful sense of commitment here. She's absolutely committed to the program of the younger girl. Now it's Naomi that starts the whole proceedings. She says in verse 1, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee? That it may be well with thee. You see, the owner really feels that in order for Ruth to have full security, she needs a husband. And Naomi said to Ruth, I want to tell you. He said, this thing needs to move on. She said, we need to take it a stage further. She said, the man knows he is giving you a welcome. That's good. He is giving you a job. That's good. And for about 2 months now, you have worked in his harvest field, and he has given you grain, and he has treated you very graciously and very generously. Now, she said, that's good. But she says, I think the time has come for us to just take this a little further. She says, it was nice for you to be one of his workers. She says, I think it's time that you had made a proposal to become a wife. Now it was the older man that took the initiative And no one is suffering. Now I know the fact that Ruth, the king of the wife of Boaz, had great advantages for Naomi, and in the will of the Lord we'll see tomorrow night. But I don't think on this occasion that Naomi was thinking of her own advantage. She was just thinking of the good and the security. Rest. Actually, that term rest has been used in chapter 1. When she told the two girls to go back, she said, go back to the house of your mother, and I hope that you'll get rest in the home of your husband. You see, it was practically impossible for a person to survive, a female, to survive in the unmarried state in the ancient world. You know, there's a little problem now, and our social state has provided many supports, financially and emotionally and every other way. Those things are almost unheard of. A single lady in the ancient world felt very vulnerable. And she could hardly get enough to keep body and soul together for protection and security and for home. The strength of a home, she needed a husband. And I always said, Mary Ruth, for your good, she said, I'm going to do my best to advance this relationship a little bit more. I think it's a great thing to know. We're not talking about the spiritual, we're just on the very plain, ordinary level of this book for a second. I think it's a good thing when older women have a healthy and a non-selfish interest in the progress of younger folk. That's a good thing. You know, I've noticed that sometimes older people, and I'm not saying that Naomi was an octogenarian or anything like that. She was probably in her late 40s. So it becomes a matter of great concern. I presume that the female lifespan in Bible times was much shorter than now, and even a lady in her late 40s would have been classified as considerably older. Probably Ruth was something in her 20s, roughly that. There's no direct guide. But I think it was a very, very commendable, and it showed her commitment. She felt that I have brought this girl here. She came here through my influence, and she said, now, I'm going to do my best to help her while she is here. I was going to say that I know sometimes older people, they tend to retire into their little closet. And sometimes older people become practically useless, because they expect all the attention. Can I say to some of you older Christians here, if you want to add a dimension of joy and fulfillment to your senior years, one of the recipes for doing that is to take a genuine interest in the rest and the security of the younger generation. Now she had a commitment to the progress of this younger woman. A second thing that I only had a commitment to was she had a commitment to patience. You see, it's one thing to imagine progress, but some people become so interested in progress that they make this push the thing too quickly. Spoiled. And she was very careful and she was very cautious. She never mentioned this until the harvest was over. And the busy days of work in the field were past. And there was a little bit more of what we would call slack time. And a lot of the pressure was off. And she said to Ruth, harvest is over, winnowing time has commenced, it's an easier time. She said, now I think it's the appropriate opportunity for you to make the approach and to present your proposal. And now you see that the advice of this older lady was exactly appropriate in the situation. Now I want to move to Boaz quickly, because I should mention Ruth first. You know, I can see that Ruth was a girl with commitment. When she made her proposal to Boaz, and she asked him to cast his garment over her, that was an ancient pictorial Hebrew way of asking Boaz to marry her. Without the slightest hesitation, said, but whatever you ask, he said, I will do. For he said, all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. Said, I think that's a very, very remarkable statement. He said, now I'm going to marry you. Did you notice that in this whole romance, they call this a book of romance, did you notice in all of that, there's hardly a trace of what we call romance. There's hardly a trace of that sparky stuff that they tell you is very, very valuable. Hardly a trace of it. Never mentions or looks one. He said, the reason that I'm going to accede to your request without hesitation is this. He said, I know. And he says, the whole city knows that you're a woman of virtue.
He says, can I tell you why, Lily? He said, Lily, your character means more to me than your sentiment.
And he says, your virtue is far more value in my estimation, really, than your visit, for she may have a veil on at this stage. And here, actually, this is the very term that we spent a bit of time talking about last night. You remember back in chapter 2, it says, and Boaz was a mighty man of wealth. Now, and I made the suggestion without saying her money that might be wasn't talking about his money. It was probably talking about his character. Now that's the very same word that we have here. So that chapter 2 could be considered that Boaz is a mighty man of virtue. And here in chapter 3, he describes this Moabitish girl as a virtuous woman. So you have a man of virtue and he's going to be united in marriage to a woman of virtue. Now they have a different nationality by birth. And they have a different social status. We know that he was obviously a very influential landlord. She was just a peasant widow. But you know, whatever other differences they may have had, this was a man. Because it was a virtuous man appreciating a virtuous woman. There's going to be a marriage in the next chapter. Can I speak to some of the younger men here tonight? You see, our custom is different. It will likely be you will make the proposal. How you say, I wondered about that. What should I be looking out for? Well, one thing that I will say, look for her. You don't want to marry a decorated dog. If you see a lady and she says she's Christian and she adorns herself with worldly passions and worldly cosmetics, you can be sure that if you're going to live a spiritual life, she's hardly going to be a a virtuous man, because here's a woman, and she's only here for 2 months. Only here for 2 months. And he says, the whole city. She's been moved in and out of fields, and the young men, and the young girls, and he says, they've been watching it, and he says, the whole city of my people has already been impressed with the fine features of your character. Many of you. The crowd that she came from were famous for their virtue. Neither were they famous for their delicacy. Moab and their origins were a very, very corrupt and incestuous nation, and they looked to be at ease. Here's a woman, and she was a worker. And she was a woman of noble character, and she was just the very opposite to the people and the tribe from whence she sprang. I want to mention as well, she was committed. So there was no trace of impropriety. There wasn't even a stench of impurity. And this woman, and then they proceeded to the marriage of chapter 4, everything was absolutely crystal clear on the other. Now, another thing that I wanted to mention about Ruth here, and I have to be very quick at this, I wanted to mention her commitment to priority. Because that was something that Boaz really appreciated. Now, he said, really, he says, to tell you the truth, he said, the reason that I didn't make the approach to you, he says, I didn't feel it was fair. For an older man like me to impose myself on a younger lady like you. And he says, quite frankly, I'm paraphrasing it. He says, quite frankly, your proposal takes me a little bit by surprise. But he says, it really delights me. But he says, the reason that you are proposing to marry me is certainly not because you haven't anyone else. He said, the choice was very wide. And he said, your reputation would mean there would have been plenty of takers. But he said, you have opted for an older man. Not just because of concern for yourself. But he said, your main concern is to perpetuate the name of the inheritance. He said, your proposal of marriage to me hasn't been dictated by selfish interest. But he says, your proposal of marriage to an older man has been dictated by an older concern. Do you know what it is? It's me. How many we have, and they show spiritual promise, and you think you're going to do well,
you can see then where their priorities really are. Now this choice showed Boaz that this woman has far more priority and puts far more weight on the perpetuation of God's inheritance than she does in her own comfort, for she's prepared to marry an older man for the sake of the inheritance. You know, sometimes people, can I speak to you young ladies here? Some of you might have to lead a single life. That will not be as difficult in our world as it was in hers. But it will have its difficulty. Singleness is a problem. I spoke on the gift of singleness in this place once before, and I've gotten into enough trouble with that, and I don't want her to beat. But singleness can be a problem. It can bring with it feelings of loss and rejection and unwantedness. And it can bring with it feelings of insecurity. But can I say to you, there will be at times in your life maybe an emotional struggle. But when it comes to this matter of a suitable companion in marriage for you, you will have to put the Lord's interest before your own interest. Many a girl, because she couldn't find a suitable man, heard and promised, inside the assembly, for the sake of marriage, she would go outside the assembly. When you say to marry a Christian, well, she leaves the assembly. You say, well, is there anything wrong with her? Well, all I say is this. One thing it does show, it shows you where her priority is. And it shows you that the possession of a husband means more place in the assembly. Boaz came. He said, you took an older man when you had a far bigger choice. And he said, the only reason you took me was because you were thinking about the Lord and his interests. Not your own. Here's a woman, and even though she's only in for a short time, I think you'd agree with me when I say she's done a grip of it. And she had a sense of commitment. Of course, Boaz was a man marked by commitment. I know what Naomi said about him. When Ruth arrived home, Ruth told Naomi what he had said and the big promises that he had made. need to worry about anything about it. She says, you can just sit down there. Sit still, my daughter. She says, don't go worrying another thing about it. But she says, you see that man? She says, if that man said, I know that he never stopped from his stuff. Here's a man of integrity, a man with commitment to his promise, and he made a promise to the younger girl, the older one of you, that he carried it through. I hope there's no brother here. And you have made promises to a number of girls along the line of life. And you have shattered promises and broken commitment. I tell you, that indicates a man of very weak character. This was a man who had commitment, and he had commitment to premise it. He said to her, he says, now you just sit away quietly. He says, if two men get to know about this, he says, if we jeopardize the whole thing, he says, well, just keep it quiet. And he let her go before it was fully daylight. Now, it wasn't that he was trying to hide guilt. Don't ever think that. To keep under the garment. There was nothing happened that night that even had the slightest flavor of impropriety. He wasn't trying to hide guilt. But I'll tell you what he was doing. He was trying to prevent gossip. But he said, you know, you get all the chat about you. Here are the women talking, and they meet in the talk in chapter 1, and they all talk in chapter 1. Boy, women can talk, can't they? And he said, if this could ever get out too quickly, and he said, too much just be heard and seen, he said, the village gossip would have it spread like wildfire. He said, no. He says, the fulfillment of this project depends upon premises. And this was a man who was coming up with that. You know, I tell you, dear brothers and sisters, you say, it's a pretending talking with something spiritual. Well, Ruth has been spreading the light so much, I think we've nearly forgotten that it actually happened. These happened. These were people. These were people coming out of common days. This was a girl coming from the outside. This was a woman looking married. This was a girl seeking a future, putting the Lord first, looking after her mother-in-law. And the beauty of it all is, you know, there's not a prophet in this book. And there's not an angel in the sea. And there's not a priest to be her teller. All those things, what we would call spiritual things, are kept over to the one side. But we're a curtain lifted on the simplicity of domestic life. And when one angel or prophet or priest, people just doing their duty with commitment and diligence, they were the very people that God used for the bringing of Christ and the establishment. Dear Christian friend, your Christianity and mine, if it's only gospel or Christianity, it has to touch the home, it has to touch the field, it has to touch the threshing floor, it has to work out of the gate. As it did here in chapter 4, you see, may we be men and women of commitment in the ordinary things of life, and we will then discover much to our surprise that the great God whom we serve, he will show himself to be absolutely permanent in the bigger things that we cannot control. Now, well, that's commitment. Naomi's commitment to progress and patience. Ruth's commitment to principle and to priority. Boaz's commitment to privacy and promise. The beautiful character of these people marked by loyalty to these various. But you know, the chapter also, and this will take us a little bit to the spiritual side of things for a few minutes. The chapter does give us a sidelight in an illustrative sense into a very important aspect of Christian experience. You see, I mentioned commitment, I'm now talking about communion. Communion with the Redeemer As we said, this is not now in the Redeemer's field. It's yesterday evening. Neither is this just yet fully in the Redeemer's family as chapter 4. But this is the girl just at the Redeemer's floor. And she's learning something about the Redeemer's food. Now I think that in this passage, and I hope that you will not think that I'm stretching it, I think we find in Ruth chapter 3 the great principles of prevailing prayer. You see, Ruth came into the presence of Boaz with a very demanding request. And you know what I've already said, from that mighty man she got a very willing heart. Now we want to take a look at why she came. And we want to take a look at how she came. And we want to take a look at what she said when she did come. And we want to take a look at what happened after she came and she went home. You know, I tell you, brother and sister, really, I think that one of our great weaknesses is this. We don't spend as much time in the presence of the Redeemer as we should spend. If we knew how to approach, if we knew how to bring our requests, maybe we would have the delight of seeing answered. Now, why did she come? Let us think just about the reason for her coming. There are a number of reasons. Naomi, when Naomi spoke to her, Naomi said to her, she said, one of the things, Ruth, that you need, this is verse 1, she said, you need to get rest. Rest. Mind you, I said that means marriage, security, the rest of a solid, strong home life in companionship with a husband. That's the kind of rest. Freedom from harm, freedom from scarcity, and freedom from hunger, and from hunger, and freedom from loneliness. It's rest in that sense. But these were troublesome times. The days when the judges ruled. And Naomi said, in times of trouble, she said that one man can give you rest. She said, you go there. She said another thing. In the same verse, the same verse. She said, shall I not seek rest for thee, in verse 1, that it may be well with thee. She said, if you get to know that man, and if you become, if this relationship that has just begun in the field, she said, if this relationship can develop and deepen, and you can get closer to this man, and you can get to know this man better, she said, not only will he give you rest, but he'll give you well-being. And then she said to her a little later down the chapter, she said, now when you get down to the floor, and you speak to this man and listen to him, she says, he will tell you what you shall do. She said, you'll get rest. And you'll get well being. And she says, from this man you'll also get guidance. And when she did speak to the man, she said to him, sir, would you put your garment over me? Now the throwing out of the garment, or it's the same word as translated wing, in the previous chapter, the wing of a bird, or the covering of a garment, that was, as I said, a pictorial expression asking for marriage. That is, in marriage, the man threw his garment over the lady, and he brought her under the covering of his protection. And she says, this man will put his garment over you. You'll get rest. You'll get well being. He'll tell you what you should do. You'll get guidance. And he said he'll give you protection. And when you think about a girl, let us think about it for a second. You think about a girl coming from a foreign country. She's what we would call in our New Testament language, she's just a new convert to the faith in the Jehovah. the God of Israel. Her future has been very, very shaky on this earth. She's amongst the people. She has never been amongst them before. She's in a new land. What would she just do?
They always say this. You go to see the man.
And everything that you need, he will give you. Now, to the young Christian here today, some of the things that I may have been talking about may have been over your head, but let me say this. You wonder, how will I ever make it through? How will I ever get peace? And how will I ever get kept steady? And how will I ever preserve spiritual well-being? And how will I know what path to take in life? And how will I ever be preserved in such a dangerous world? Just a young convert, and you hardly know one book of the Bible from the other. These fellows could talk about Daniel for a month, and you can hardly even find the book of Daniel. You say, how will I ever get through?
Listen, there's one thing I want to tell you to do. Just as a new convert, you develop in your life the discipline of spending time in the Redeemer's presence. And as you spend time with Him, it's there that you'll get the rest and the guidance and the security and the well-being and the protection. Now the reason Ruth went to this man was because you had a sense of need. You know, there's nothing that makes people pray like me. If we really knew how needy we were, I tell you, brethren, listen to that. The assemblies, as we look upon them tonight, and I'm not a pessimist, and I'm not one of these characters that believe all the good men died just about 1900. And there's just been scrap left and everything's gone. I don't believe that at all, but I'll tell you this. I can see that in our day there's a tremendous selection. And they're all weaknesses. And we don't seem to have the strength. And there's an awful disturbance amongst us, isn't there? Isn't there an awful lack of rest? Aren't there not a lot of people floating about? And they never seem to get their feet on the ground. They have a butterfly mentality, and they're floating about from flower to flower and place to place, and they're never getting the. They don't know what to do. I tell you, we have such a lack of these things, why don't we need to pray? And that's the reason. Wasn't nice. And I'm looking back now in the spiritual sense of what I said in the ordinance. Wasn't nice that there was an older lady. And she was able to tell this younger, this new convert, she was able to tell her what would be appropriate for the presence of those. And she told her immediately.
We have only her reason for going, but we have the requirements that she met. So I always said, listen, she said, you have to watch yourself.
He said, all that old grime and all that old stuff that you've got out there in the field working and all that, and the perspiration, this gleaning business was dreadful work. It was just dreadful work. It would have left the person just very, very grubby and scrubby, as we would say, at the end of the day. And she said, you'll have to wash yourself. And she said, you have to anoint yourself. And you'll have to clothe yourself. Just put off your widowhood, the weeds of widowhood. And she says, put on different garments so that you'll not be approaching this man as a widow. He knew that you're coming in a different aspect. And then she says, you'll have to go down to the floor. She says, just be very careful now. She says, don't jump. She says, don't barge in too quickly. Oh, no. She said, now you watch, she said, he's finished. And when he eats and drinks, she said, don't you interrupt his meal. She said, you'd be very satisfied with the body. And when the man lies down, she says, you go in and you just very modestly and quietly take a place at his feet. And she said, that's how you go.
She had the etiquette of telling this new convert how to approach. You know, I think that's great. Can I say to speak to your older sisters here? And you forgive me for saying this. Do you know that younger sisters in the assembly, they'll probably follow your example? And that's a serious thing. Can I say to the older sisters here, and we appreciate all the Naomis in this meeting. When did you last take a new root, quietly to the side, and give her a little bit of spirit of counsel and tell her how to enrich her communion with Christ? And how to deepen things and develop things. You know, our approach, I think we need a really bit of help. A really bit of help on the appropriate way to approach the Lord. And the approach, she says everything about your approach to this Bible. She says your appearance, your attire, she says the active approach itself, and the whole attitude. You see, one of the things that impressed me in reading this, and I just select this one out, was the amount of time involved. She couldn't just write down and say, oh, what? Okay, I'm thinking, what about her? Write out. No, she had to wait. Until he was quiet and until she was composed. And until she was spoken to. And then she presented her request. When I say, when I make out of touch and saying, dear brothers and sisters, and that'll be one of the things that's catching us most. Is that we're not prepared to give it time. You know, you can't do it. This, most of us, and I'm talking about myself as well, and I know many of you people are busy with work, it's all right for the rest of us to function our time, but some of you have to work every day. And I want to say this, that the hit and run Christian. Time minutes at the end of the day. 3 minutes in the morning, the same rattle of a prayer. You see, that doesn't really get through. She says, I really have to take your time. I know it's an old hymn, and some people think it's out old fashioned, and out of keeping with certain things, but it'll do me just now. Take time to be holy. Speak off to the Lord. What was great to be out in the day? And the young men were there, and the young ladies were there, and Moses was there, and there was a whole buzz of activity. That was chapter 2. And there were people working and cutting and tying and banging and leaning. There was just a buzz of activity everywhere. It was great to be working in the street. But I tell you, there's something different than we're waiting on his floor. There's nobody else there. Just herself and him. Now I wonder when all was said and done, you'll be going to be a meeting. And of course it's great to be here tonight. And there's constant buzz. And isn't it very difficult in our day to get quiet? Jesus, now what I'm talking about is, it's not just having 15 minutes at the close of the day. And you can't just say at a quarter to 10 I start, and at 10 o'clock I stop and that'll do. It might take a good while until you get yourself in the right frame of soul. And she said, Ruth, there'll have to be purity, and there'll have to be perfume. And she said, there'll have to be caution, and come in very quietly. You know, I'm amazed that sometimes the way we approach meetings, even. I'm amazed at the way some people storm into meetings. Some people storm out of them. Some people slouch in their seats. Some people glare around them. Some people now are coming to these holy things in the most casual dress that they can wear. Listen, I really think that our attitude needs to be refined. I only said, Ruth, if you're going to really get the full attention of this man, you
angel of cooking in the proper manner.
I leave that. Because it's very interesting to see that when she did eventually get there, he asked her for who she was, and actually when she presented her prayer, it was very short. That's a good thing. She said very little. She just says, I'm your husband, spread your garment over me, for thou art a sin's man. End of story. It's a very simple principle to us, for us, and it is always good in other parts of the Bible, that the effectiveness of prayer doesn't depend upon the length of it. You know, this was at the threshing floor. You know that a threshing floor is a place where... Well, what is it? What is a threshing floor? Naomi said, she said, Ruth, you're going to a man tonight and he's winnowing barley. When a man's on a threshing floor and he's winnowing barley, you know, there are a number of things. He's far more interested in quality than he is in quantity. When a man is winnowing barley, he's far more interested in weight than he is in volume. When a man is winnowing barley, he's far more interested in the kernel than he is in the husk. And when he's winnowing barley, he's far more interested in the inferior than he is in the exterior. She said, Naomi, the presence of this man and his interests, he doesn't want anything that's just chaff. He's looking for reality and substance rather than show. And so she had her little request down to the bare minimum. She just said what she needed to say. And I love to think about the quickness of the reply. You know the reaction. He didn't keep her waiting. He gave her an immediate response. It's the bulk of the chapter, it's the main part of the chapter, and I may be lapping back a little bit upon it tomorrow night in a different connection, so I know that means you. He just gave her his word. He gave her the assurance of his promise. You know, it's interesting that when Naomi told Ruth what to do, she said to her mother-in-law, she said, I will do it. Beautiful obedience. When she went into the presence of Boaz and made a request of him, you know what he said to her? He said, I will do it. So the girl who said, I will do it, was the girl who heard from the lips of the Redeemer the same word. I will do it. I have wondered as I thought about that, just as a basic principle, I wonder, dear Ben, would our answers to our prayers be a little bit more food? A little bit more frequent than in our life the obedience was just a little bit more bad. She took a risk in all this. As I have said, and I'm almost concluding, he was very careful when it came to sending her away. Now he said, you need to be careful here, that this whole thing doesn't be misconstrued or misunderstood. He said, the people of the village, if they see this, he said, they might not just be able to grasp exactly how much is involved, and this whole business of the inheritance and the go well and all that's involved, he said, they'll just not grasp, and they're liable to put two and two together to get five and to misunderstand it all. So to say this, do you see, I'm speaking especially to new converts, thinking of Ruth in the parallel of new converts, younger Christian, do you see if you're prepared to give time to the Lord? Set aside time to be with Him. Time for prayer. Time for speaking to Him. Time for listening to Him. Reading His Word. If you're prepared to set aside time for that in your life, as Ruth did here, through the space of a whole night, you find that there's quite a number of people not able to understand. You're to blame. They won't know what's going on. They will say, that's why we need to get up and do something. derby, these famous prayers. Why did he go and do something useful? Just missing things.
No. I'll tell you. One of our hymns said, maybe we'll sing a verse from it here before we go. And the hymn writer talked about, alone with thee, O Master, where the light of earthly glory died. That's where Ruth was. In the shadows of that evening, away from the glare of the public eye, Ruth was lying at the Redeemer's feet and listening to his word and receiving the assurance of his promise and the revelation of his mind. Alone with thee, O Master, where the light of earthly glory died. Misunderstood by all, I dare to do what thy own heart would say. If you had spoken to many people, they would have said, "Tell you, if you're taking a chance, it's a risky thing that you're doing to go in when the lamb's sleeping and to disturb his sleep after a busy harvest day. That's a very, very daring and a risk." I tell you, it might have been daring to not your own calculation. But mind you, the dividend. You younger Christians, I'm appealing to you, and I'm about to let you all go home, and the older folks will bear with it, because some of these brethren know about younger brethren and younger sisters. Don't be afraid to set aside at least 3 nights a week. And don't spend all your time running for meetings. And don't spend all your time gathering about and driving hither and thither on socials and parties and banquets. You need to spend a night or two in the Redeemer's presence. Nobody knew that. You have heard what you've got home. So walk in through the door. Just to be able to find you. Where were you? Said thy old man. That was last night, but the Redeemer. I tell you, I have been in meeting, and the Redeemer got up, and it was more than a lucky guy, and they were able to get. And some of the stuff was very rattling. The lamb that had been used before it was well dead. This was a bag of fresh barley. You know, a night in the Redeemer's roar. When the chaff is blown away with the wind of the Spirit's energy, that leaves the person who is head of it like that, that leaves him with a fullness and a something to bring home for a time. They didn't only know that the house. Where did you get this? The next morning, when all the elders gathered at the gate, they heard at the gate. For the Lord says, "I am going to bury the dirt and the threshing floor last night." I tell you, brothers and sisters, let me say this. If we give time to be at the Redeemer's floor, then the factor of life would go. And it will be seen by the elders in the gate. Because communion with Christ doesn't need to be advertised. Moses said to Ruth, "You don't need to tell anybody you stand up 2 hours sitting here praying. You never need to do that."
The time of Christ doesn't need to be advertised.
Because within a very short space of something that jumped ahead, it will be seen. Now I just want to conclude, you know, at the end of this chapter, the end of the chapter is the last time that Naomi and Ruth speak. They don't speak at all in chapter 4. It's a book of dialogue. There are about 1,300 words in Ruth in Hebrew. I counted them this morning. And there are about 698 of those words, dialogue, conversation. It's Boaz that does the most speaking. Ruth does the least. Naomi does quite a bit. And the last time that Naomi and Ruth are found conversing is at the end of chapter 3. And you know what they're talking about?
They're talking about the mob. Talking about the mob. Naomi says, she says, set stone like your daughter. She said, I would have taken it. She's going to be without money. You needn't worry. She can just count. She said, all that tension and all that anxiety is not worthy that you have at the start of the chapter about rest and security. He didn't worry. And then with him, he can sit still. He said, the man will do it. The man will do it. Naomi was talking about the man, the older lady. And the younger lady was talking about the man. And she said, you know, the man told me that he'd do it in the morning. And the older woman just waited on what the man would do in the morning. Well, I'll go home with that. Dear brothers and sisters, you know, time spent with Christ means that we're ready for the dawning of a better day. We know a glorious man. He's a lover of our soul. He's a redeemer of the forfeited inheritance. All those mortgages in Adam has been recovered by the blood of Christ. He's our glorious redeemer. May we spend more time at his feet. Till that Greek you say to us, bring your babies. And the girl who spent the night at his feet before the morning came to him looking into his face. The veil was gone. She saw him face to face. We will soon see him face to face. May our position at his feet be more frequent until the ring of that perilous dawn shall be made. Our Father, we come unto Savior in name. We thank you again for these ancient illustrations conveying to our hearts the principles of progress and propriety. We confess at the close of the meeting the shallowness of our spiritual experience. We thank thee for the glowing example of a Moabite, a poor girl with little privilege in her background. Some of us have been brought up in association with assemblies and with Bible teaching and gospel preaching, and we confess our dwarfishness and our spiritual pigminess and stature and our materialism. We ask thee to help us in a busy world to spend more time with things that matter, so that our lives may carry the evidence of those seasons of communion with the risen Christ. We commend ourselves to thee. We thank thee for all who have gathered, and ask thy blessing upon every Ruth and every Naomi and every Boaz in this meeting. And we offer thanks to the Savior's precious name. Amen. We have 618. It's just